This is the Ethanol Report. I had the opportunity to visit with Bob Dineen, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, in his office during a recent trip to Washington, D.C., and we covered the waterfront on issues currently facing the ethanol industry, first and foremost being the EPA proposal to lower the volume requirements under the Renewable Fuel Standard. What at this point is going on in Washington as far as the RFS is concerned?
Well, I think the administration has recognized that they probably went a little bit too far, that they are hearing from the heartland. They saw more than 200,000 comments filed on their proposal to reduce the RFS. And there are probably some folks in the White House right now saying, what did we do? And why are we on the side of big oil? And how can we get out of this mess? Which is a good thing. And I think they're trying to figure out, how do we dial this back? Whether or not the administration returns to the 14.4 billion gallons and returns the integrity to the RFS or not, I can't say. I know they are absolutely making adjustments. And as I've said so many times before, I'm less concerned about what the number is. I am far more concerned about what the justification for any change is. And if this administration allows the blend wall or infrastructure or gasoline and ethanol demand factors to weave its way into a waiver authority that is exclusively about ethanol supply, then they have just totally ignored the statute and they have turned the RFS on its heels. We cannot allow the blend wall or ethanol demand to drive this nation's renewable fuel policy. The RFS was never intended to be about what ExxonMobil wants to sell. It was about driving marketplace change. It was about driving greater than 10% renewable fuels into the marketplace. It is about higher level blends. It is about E15. It is about E30. It is about E85. This was not a 10% ethanol mandate, period. And that's what EPA and the oil companies want to make it. I think a 10% ethanol mandate is good, but that's a 13 billion gallon requirement. And this is a 36 billion gallon program. And EPA needs to wake up and understand that. And I think they are beginning to realize that, yeah, okay, maybe Congress did know what they were doing when they wrote the bill, and maybe we really should read the statute again, and maybe we really shouldn't have ticked off all of agriculture. So I do anticipate that there'll be changes made.
Well, we had ethanol supporters visiting with lawmakers on Capitol Hill in support of the RFS this week. The American Petroleum Institute apparently started yet another Beltway-targeted ag campaign urging Congress to repeal the RFS. They've kind of been quiet since the EPA proposal was released, and do you think they might be maybe getting a little nervous that proposal could be changed yet?
I don't think the American Petroleum Institute would be spending gobs of money on ads intended to reignite a legislative effort in the Congress if they were confident that they had secured victory through the administration. I think they're doing that because, indeed, they are hearing what we are hearing, and they're trying to say, okay, well, I guess it was a nice try at the White House, but maybe we need to go back to our friends on Capitol Hill and see if we can't ignite that firestorm again. I don't think they'll be successful. I think trying to scare members of Congress with people in life vests carrying oars, apparently having walked up from the Potomac River with a boat that was left stranded in the middle of the river, is really not going to have the impact that they think, because it's just so utterly ridiculous and without foundation. But, you know, when you have more money than any company on the face of the planet, I'm sorry, more money than any industry in the universe, you can maybe waste your time on those kind of advertisements, but they don't win legislative fights.
Didn't AAA come out this week and say that ethanol was increasing the price of gasoline?
Indeed, AAA did. I think they were mimicking Trilby Lundberg, who is always looking for a way to deflect attention away from the skyrocketing price of crude oil and gasoline and blame the ethanol industry and farmers for driving up consumer gasoline costs, but it's not going to resonate. What I do think is that people are recognizing that the giant sucking sound out of North Dakota, that you know we are spending so much money and attention trying to frack our way to energy independence, is having an impact in many ways. One of those ways is by using up a lot of rail cars and locomotives that once were used to haul ethanol, once we used to haul coal, once we used to haul corn and grain, and now because the oil companies can spend money on anything, and now they're being used to haul crude oil. And that is having an impact on the price of gasoline because people can't just get enough ethanol. They can't ship it there. They can't, you know, so the logistics of moving ethanol around the country has been complicated by big oil's insatiable appetite for infrastructure.
Let's talk some more about those rail delays. We visited with Senator John Thune of South Dakota this week, who said that he's had the rail companies continuing to apologize about the situation, but it seems like the crude oil from North Dakota is moving at the expense of other commodities like ethanol and corn, and yet they continue to blame the delays on the weather.
Well, you know, you can't really blame them. You know, the oil industry is sort of centered in the Gulf Coast. It's a Texas and Oklahoma industry, right? So, you know, they may not be used to winter. But you ask the people in North Dakota, winter comes every year. There's snow in North Dakota just about every January. And sometimes it snows in South Dakota and Canada and New York and the Great Lakes, too. I mean, we get snow. So trying to blame it all on Mother Nature, I don't think so. I think, look, there's no question this has been a remarkably difficult winter, particularly here in Washington, D.C., where people are about over it and are hunting Mother Nature down and trying to figure out what they all did wrong and why can't spring finally come as it's snowing again today. But in North Dakota, they're used to the snow, and they kind of realize that it's going to be there every year. So everything cannot be blamed on the weather. At least some of this has got to be because the oil industry is moving so much of their product on the rails, and they can pay premiums to make sure that the locomotives go to Mandan, North Dakota, as opposed to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And, you know, so we've got ethanol plants that aren't able to move product out because somebody else has paid a premium for their locomotive. And it really is a problem. And it's not an ethanol problem because other industries are being impacted by this as well. You look at what's going on with coal and what's going on with corn and grains. I mean, we're all being impacted by this. And, you know, okay, I think it's great that we're getting more oil production from North Dakota. But people ought to recognize what some of the other impacts of that are. And one of them is, it's absolutely complicated how we are shipping products on the rail lines today.
Let's get back to the RFS. At the beginning of the year when we talked, you said that you didn't expect there to be efforts this year in Congress to revisit attempts to change or repeal the law in light of the EPA proposal. So if that proposal gets knocked back, well, what then?
I think you would still find most lobbyists in town saying the Congress is not going to be able to pass anything in this Congress. Now, are there members of the Congress that would like to hold hearings, like to move legislation? Might something actually pass the committee or even the House floor? Yeah, potentially, sure. But I think that would be a mistake, and I don't really think it's going to happen. You know, Congress has a lot of things on its plate these days, whether it's the Ukraine or natural gas exports or, you know, how do we get more jobs in this country? And you know, so there's a lot of things for them to do. Revisiting an energy policy that has stimulated investment in rural America, that has reduced the cost of gasoline, that has reduced our imports, that is eliminating carbon, is probably not high on.
So how about extension of the tax credits for advanced biofuels that expired at the end of last year? Do you expect Congress to get that done sometime in the near future?
Indeed, I do think that there will be an effort to pass an extender's bill. Both bodies now are looking at extender's legislation. I think if they do, it is quite likely that the cellulosic tax credit will be reinstated. The irony of the production tax incentive that has been in place that you only get if you are producing ethanol and has been in place for several years now when we weren't producing cellulosic ethanol. The moment you have three or four companies on the cusp of commercial production, so they're finally at the place where they might actually be able to take advantage of a tax incentive. Oh, we're sorry, the tax incentive isn't there anymore. So they had gone out and they sought investors on the premise that a federal tax incentive would be there, and now that they're producing the juice, the tax incentive is gone. I think that's not cool. And I think even members of Congress realize that maybe that's something we should revisit. And I am confident that if there is an extender's package, that'll be included. What happens with the biodiesel tax credit is probably in the same boat. They're going to wrestle over what to do with the wind tax incentive and the solar. It's all those renewables tax incentives. And there are members of Congress that think we ought to do away with all of those renewable things. Ironically, while leaving in place all the petroleum tax incentives that they say they don't get, but they fight awful hard to keep. I think it probably happens later in the congressional session. I don't think it's something that happens in the next month or two. But come September, October, before the elections, I think you'll see a tax extenders bill.
Well, Secretary Vilsack, who's obviously a strong supporter of biofuels, when he spoke at Commodity Classic and two ethanol groups like ACE and Growth Energy, has talked about ways that USDA is going to continue to help grow ethanol production in higher blends. And two ways in particular, by promoting exports to Japan, China, and India, and also by finding other programs to help increase infrastructure like blender pumps, since the new farm bill took away the program that had been used for that purpose. But what do you think about his ideas and how they could help, especially if the RFS does get cut?
Well, first of all, you say he's a strong supporter. There has never, ever been a more effective, articulate advocate for value-added agriculture, including ethanol, than Tom Vilsack. He understands it. When he was governor of Iowa and he saw the industry growing, he saw firsthand what an ethanol plant meant to a rural community. And so he has been committed to that throughout his entire career, but certainly as Secretary of Agriculture, he's been phenomenal. And because he is so committed, he is going to look for ways to make sure that we continue to encourage investment in infrastructure for higher-level blends. He did carve out a program over the last several years that helped us get more blender pumps out there. And the real irony of EPA saying, oh, well, we've got to roll back the RFS because of a lack of infrastructure, and at the same time, a program to encourage that infrastructure, the Congress is rolling back. Maybe these two ought to talk to one another. I think he is indeed committed to making sure that USDA is helping address some of that absurdity and getting more infrastructure out there. The other irony is, while this country is trying to figure out ways to limit ethanol use, other countries around the globe are recognizing how important ethanol is, and the export opportunities for ethanol are just critical to our continued economic success as an industry, but also critical to growing the biofuels industry around the world. So, we are working with USDA, with the Department of Commerce, with U.S. Grains Council and Growth Energy, mm-hmm. to try to put a program together that will take advantage of some of those opportunities. The USDA already had a trade mission established for China. He's now added ethanol as a component of that. We're sending people over there. For the first time in December, we cracked the door a little bit, and we got some ethanol exported to China. And that opened some eyes, and hopefully we'd be able to get a lot more. Mm-hmm. India and Japan are obviously other opportunities, but there'll be other places, Mexico. You know, we still think we'll be able to export more to Europe, even though they're saying no, no, 1,000 times no. The marketplace is saying, well, you really still can't compete, and the U.S. ethanol is the lowest cost liquid transportation fuel on the planet. So there are actually people in Europe that are looking to import U.S.-produced ethanol as well. Mm-hmm. Brazil, I mean, we're going to be sending a lot more to Brazil because they're having issues with their sugar crop. So we think that while we only exported, I say only, it was still 700 million gallons in 2013, we're looking to double that in 2014. We think it could be the single largest year ever in terms of ethanol exports. And if EPA wants to tell us, you know, no, we can't let you blend any more than ExxonMobil tells us we can, then fine, we'll find other markets.
At the ACE fly-in this week, we had like a record number of more than 80 people here to talk to their lawmakers about the RFS, about the importance of ethanol. And these are people from not just farmers and ethanol producers, but bankers and retailers and all kinds of people. And it just seems like there's a lot of enthusiasm and energy in the ethanol industry. Are you seeing that as well?
Oh, I absolutely am. I think the ACE Beltway March is a great event. I think Brian Jennings and the American Coalition for Ethanol does a great job organizing that event. But absolutely, Americans from all walks of life have recognized that diversifying our energy supply, providing rural economic opportunities through value-added agriculture and opportunities like ethanol is real important. You know, it's not an accident that more than 200,000 comments were filed on this rule. It's not an accident that farmers from South Dakota and Illinois and Nebraska and Missouri and all across the country stood up and said no on the heels of the single largest corn crop in history. This maybe isn't the best time to be taking markets away. Consumers were registering their concerns with EPA. We're looking at $3.80 gasoline in this part of the country, and it's going over $4 again. Now maybe isn't the time to be taking fuel supply out of the marketplace and driving up the price of gasoline. You got environmentalists that are saying, wait a minute, this administration appears to be committed to climate change. Why in the world would you roll back the only program that we have that is actually doing something to remove carbon from transportation fuels? A report that Bio put out yesterday talking about how much additional carbon will be put into the atmosphere as a consequence of the administration's proposal. So this rule affects lots of people, and lots of people want the administration to reverse itself and to restore the integrity of the single best energy, environmental, rural economic, consumer-oriented program that we've had in a generation. And I think folks are anxious to come to Washington, anxious to have their voices heard. And quite frankly, I think members of Congress appreciate hearing the message. And it's real important that events like the Beltway March occur.
That's the Ethanol Report. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.